You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I cover the Chicago Bears for NBC Sports Chicago, and I cover the NFL for Pro Football Focus. Locked On Bears is your podcast destination for daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. And today, we're diving deep on Mitchell Trubisky. We'll be joined by Mark Schofield, who is the host of Locked On Patriots, but he also writes for Inside the Pylon and Pro Football Weekly and a few other places. And he really is the resident quarterback expert here. He did a great write-up at Pro Football Weekly, breaking down Trubisky as a rookie quarterback and what we've seen this preseason and kind of how his development is shaking out. So we're going to talk to him about that piece, what he's seen for Trubisky, and what we can expect this year from the young quarterback. But before we bring on Mr. Schofield, a friend of the podcast who you've heard on here a few times before, we got to get to the latest and greatest out of Halas Hall this week. And as Wednesday went on, we had our first injury report of the season, and the Bears were remarkably healthy here to start things off. And that doesn't mean, you know, it's all going to be like this the rest of the week, and there's not, you know, some potential for changes here leading up to Green Bay, but the initial injury report featured DeAndre Houston Carson as out for practice with that broken forearm he suffered in the preseason. No surprise there. Then there was also Mr. Daniel Brown, the backup tight end. He was limited in his participation because of a shoulder injury. And that's it. That's it for your Wednesday Bears injury report, which in and of itself is encouraging and a nice start to the season. The Bears rarely enter week one this healthy. That, you know, Adam Shaheen's on injured reserve, and, you know, that's not some, you know, that's not to something to ignore, but, you know, he's not a total starter or anything. They're not really missing any starters. And Houston Carson is a special team safety, and Daniel Brown is, you know, your fourth or fifth tight end when everything's set. So, you know, you're really not missing anything, and it's a great, healthy Bears start that we just haven't really seen in years in Chicago. A team start out the year this healthy. But the bigger story is not just that no one's injured, but it's the players that aren't on that list, players that have been on that list. And, you know, when you first look at it, you're like, oh, that's nice. There's not very many people there. And you forget, that means Aaron Lynch, full participant at Bears practice, I believe for the first time all preseason. And that also means Roquan Smith, full participant at Bears practice, and Khalil Mack as well, although that one maybe was a little bit more expected, but that's huge from a health standpoint. I mean, Roquan Smith, no more hamstring tightness, evidently, or not enough to limit him at all in practice, in theory, from what we can tell on the outside. And Aaron Lynch, who had dealt with hamstring, and I think there was like a foot or an ankle thing earlier this offseason, a lot of different things have continued to ail Aaron Lynch, and all of a sudden, the regular season gets rolling, and the Bears have him, and he's back and rolling, and all of a sudden, your pass rushing group is full health, your linebackers are at full health, and this team might just be ready to roll week one in Green Bay. Now, it was just one practice, and I'm sure if you don't listen to this podcast the day it comes out, which will be Wednesday, September 6th here as we get rolling, then, you know, by then you'll have couple more injury reports to kind of know where it goes from here. But, you know, Matt Nagy has talked about stringing together consecutive good practices. And that's really the next step here for these guys. You know, Roquan Smith needs to practice fully Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, staying healthy, staying in shape, staying smooth, really getting comfortable in this Bears defense. Same with Aaron Lynch. You know, he's a guy that, from a playbook standpoint, he's already there. He already knows Vic Fangio, but he needs to be in football shape. Needs to be, you know, no rust out there with his teammates. And at least with him and I guess Roquan, neither one of those guys is going to start, even if everything was fully healthy. I mean, I know Roquan will eventually, but you're not going to see him take over week one at this point. But it is a good sign that both of them are ready to get significant action in this game. What that looks like, well, I think the Bears are going to be pretty reserved with that. They're not going to show their hand too much. And it is going to be a little bit of a mystery. I think Roquan will play in a lot of passing down situations, a lot of nickel packages, so he can kind of either rush the passer or drop back in coverage. But I think they'll mix him in there as much as they can. I know they don't want to overdo it, and that's why I don't think we're going to see a crazy amount of him. But maybe he plays 30 to 40% of the game, maybe even up to half of the game, depending on how it goes for him and Nick Kwiatkowski and what the Packers kind of continue to throw at him. But there's some potential there for Roquan to earn a bigger and bigger role. Still don't think we're a week away yet from him starting, but I think we're getting closer and closer. And then Aaron Lynch is always going to be a rotational outside linebacker in this group, and that's fine. You know, with Khalil Mack, the concern about Aaron Lynch becomes less and less, and he can just be an added bonus if he can stay healthy, if he can get back to the guy he was with Vic Fangio on the San Francisco 49ers. But realistically, he is still fourth in your outside linebacker rotation. It's Khalil Mack, it's Leonard Floyd, then it's Sam Acho, then it's Aaron Lynch. So he's going to get some passing situations. You know, it's tough when you're Vic Fangio. You know, how do you find snaps for Aaron Lynch? Because you don't want to take Khalil Mack off the field, although you will because it's his first game and he might not be in full football shape. But, you know, you don't, in passing situations, you want Mack and Floyd to rush the passer, or maybe you want Sam Acho in there because he's the best coverage guy of the group. So then where does that leave Aaron Lynch? I guess maybe in some base defense looks, you know, take Leonard Floyd out when Green Bay goes with two tight ends and a fullback and put Lynch in there for a little more beef. You know, I think we could see something like that, but you also want to see Lynch get after the quarterback. So I think we'll see Lynch used sparingly given his injury history and his lack of experience with the team, and he'll play the least of Mack, Smith, and of course, Aaron Lynch. But it is exciting for Vic Fangio. It's a good problem for him to have now that he has his entire defense realistically healthy and ready to go, with the exception of DeAndre Houston Carson, who wasn't really going to play on defense in this game anyway. So buckle up for a nice defensive showing against Aaron Rodgers on Sunday. It should be a nice test for Vic Fangio to really have some fun with his new toys. Because really, this Bears defense, with a couple of nice pieces added there in the front seven, it could really be the key to throwing a wrench into the Packers game plan. And if that's the case, you could really see Vegas get thrown for a loop here with some of the betting lines that we still have on this game. Over at mybookie.ag, the Bears are still 7.5-point underdogs here. And Khalil Mack is the kind of player that can pretty well change a game single-handedly with a few pass rushes here and there. So if you want to get in on the action and put some money down on Sunday night's game, I highly recommend you check out mybookie.ag, because where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. That's why I recommend MyBookie. You can lay down some cash, win big today, because they've been in this business for years. They've got great reviews online, and I really find their mobile site, particularly on my phone, is pretty friendly to use. If you join MyBookie, they will match your first deposit dollar for dollar, because you are a Locked On Bears listener, if you use the promo code LOCKEDON when you sign up. Don't forget, MyBookie has live and in-game betting, so you can get in on the action even after kickoff. So many reasons to play at MyBookie. They've got some really rewarding player perks as well, and you can get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar. Just use that promo code LOCKEDON, because at MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Let's move into some in-depth Mitchell Trubisky talk here and bring on Mark Schofield. You can find his written work across the Twitter sphere, but more specifically on Inside the Pylon, Pro Football Weekly, The Score, and Big Blue View. And he is the host of Locked On Patriots here on the Locked On Podcast Network. But I really think we should start a Locked On Quarterbacks and have Mark be the host there, because that is his specialty. That is why we're having him on the podcast today, besides just being a handsome man and a very gracious football analyst. Mark, how are you doing this morning?
Handsome? Wow, I haven't heard that in a while, my friend. I appreciate that. And Lord, always good to be with you. And I would love to do a Locked On Quarterback show. That would be fantastic. But happy to be here. Happy to talk a little Mitchell Trubisky, the Trubisky, as it were, with you this fine morning.
Well, let's get right into it. You did a piece for Pro Football Weekly entitled Trubisky in Progress, which I think is, you know, a very apt and appropriate kind of way to describe it, because, you know, I think outside of Chicago, there's some real question marks about whether or not Mitchell Trubisky is good and whether or not he is a true franchise quarterback. And inside Chicago, understandably, I think Bears fans have pretty well sold themselves on this guy is the savior of the franchise. And, you know, we still don't know exactly how good he's going to be, but we saw some flashes in year one. So let's start a little bit chronologically here. What did you kind of see last year from Mitchell Trubisky, good and bad, that kind of leads off your analysis?
Well, I mean, I think from the good, a lot of what we saw was, it sort of comes from a competitive toughness, pocket toughness, you know, standpoint. And that was one of the traits that I really liked about him coming out of UNC. I mean, you saw, you know, there were some games where he's taking a lot of shots in college, but he had that inner toughness, that willingness to hand in the pocket and make throws, which, you know, as a quarterback, it's sometimes one of the toughest things you have to do, knowing that I have to hand in there, I have to take this shot, you know, from the linebacker, from a guy that's breaking free, whatever, because it's the only way we're going to be successful on this given play. And, you know, Trubisky, you know, both in his times at UNC and at times, you know, last year with the Bears in his rookie year when he's, you know, got onto the field, he showed a willingness to do that. And so that's certainly something that's a positive. I think you look at some of the throws that he made. Yeah, there was times when, you know, the lower body mechanics have been an issue for him. You and I actually once talked about an interception he threw against Detroit when he was moving to his left, didn't get that shoulder turn, didn't get that lead shoulder involved the way he needed to. So there's been some mechanical inconsistencies, but I think for the most part, he started to sort a lot of that out. You look at, you know, for example, I did a piece over with Matt Waldman's rookie scouting portfolio, looking at a throw he missed against Stanford in his last college game, and then he throws a similar route to Adam Shaheen, you know, against Cincinnati last year, and he missed it badly against Stanford. But you see better footwork, better lower body mechanics on the throw with Chicago, and you see a completion. And so that's been a good developmental sign for him as well. I think from the negative standpoint, at least when I studied him last year, was the process and speed and the quick decision making. There were a number of times last year when I would study him, you know, and I'm old school, pen and paper, write down everything. And at the top of my, you know, sheet on him, it would just be, you know, hesitation or be faster, or sometimes with a lot of exclamation points because I'm a 13-year-old girl, I guess. But he needed to get faster. And that's sort of going to be, you know, my starting point, my baseline on him for this season. And, you know, you mentioned the Pro Football Weeklies. I'm going to be studying him each week for Pro Football Weekly, and each, you know, Monday or Tuesday, I think Tuesday, going to have a breakdown of, you know, what we've saw from him the previous game, you know, what we saw from Matt Nagy as a play caller, and, you know, trying to help that developmental process. And that's going to be a huge area of my focus this year, is seeing how that process and speed and that decision making, how much faster he gets in that area over the course of his second year.
I know sometimes it's hard to get a good feel for this, and every quarterback is different, but generally speaking, how well across the league do you see quarterbacks improve that processing speed? You know, it would seem like the kind of thing that can be, you know, difficult, you know, it's just kind of how fast your brain works. Like, how much faster do you see quarterbacks improve in that area? Is it an offensive scheme familiarity thing where once he really, really knows the plays and the playbook, that's just the natural speed picking up? Or is there more that a quarterback can do to improve in that area?
Yeah, it's a great question. And honestly, if I knew the right answer to that one, I'd probably be a much more, shall we say, well-off man. Because I would have the secret elixir to studying quarterbacks and analyzing them and coaching them, perhaps, because it is sort of it's not really a one size fits all type of situation, because there is sort of a scheme fit component to that, where, you know, the type of offense and your familiarity with that offense is certainly going to help, you know, you make faster reads and faster decisions and get the ball out of your hand quicker on a given play. So there's that aspect to it. There's a coaching aspect to it. I mean, you look at, for example, and, you know, this is the parallel that a lot of people, myself included, have been trying to make over the past couple of months, is that Trubisky and Goff type comparison. And I think Bears fans are hoping for a similar developmental curve, which we saw with Goff from year one to year two. When you look at Goff in year one, and the coaching fit wasn't right for him, it was a more defensive-minded, conservative approach. Now you get McVay coming in with, you know, different offensive philosophy, much more wide open offensive philosophy, doing a lot of stuff with spacing and really sort of scheming stuff and giving his quarterback help. And there's nothing wrong with helping your quarterback. I mean, they even went as far as to get plays in and get to the huddle quickly enough so McVay could give him last second advice before the radio cut out in his helmet. And people kind of derided that a little bit, saying, oh, come on, let the guy learn. But this is one of the ways you help him. There's nothing wrong with helping a quarterback. And so I think that there's a number of factors that go into it, and that's why it's going to be so critical to sort of watch how Matt Nagy sort of structures this offense and the concepts he uses, including some air raid stuff that can date back to Trubisky's days at UNC, to give him that familiarity, to give him that sort of schematic familiarity. I mean, we're coming off a year where we saw Alex Smith have a very good season, partly because Andy Reid was more than willing to go into his college playbook at Utah and give him some designs to run that he was very familiar with and very comfortable with. And, you know, the Bears' new head coach saw that up close and in person. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all once we see, you know, their full playbook, to see a lot of stuff ripped out of Larry Fedora's UNC-type playbook that Trubisky was familiar with from his college days.
I definitely want to get into Matt Nagy's scheme with you here in a minute. But before we do, I got to remind everybody that it's not too late to get your tickets for Bowling with Bobby Portis this weekend in Chicago. It's Saturday, September 8th, 2 to 6 p.m. at King's Dining and Entertainment in Chicago. Locked On Bulls will be there bowling with the Chicago Bulls forward. There'll also be autograph and photo sessions and some VIP meet and greets. There's food, of course, and great Bulls talk. For all you Bulls fans out there, you can still buy, you know, general admission tickets and VIP tickets. Go to eventbrite.com and search Bowling with Bobby, or just go to Locked On Bulls on Twitter or on Facebook. There's plenty of ways to get involved with that show, and I recommend you tune in, because Jordan and Matt over there do a phenomenal job breaking down the Chicago Bulls over in the NBA. We also have Locked On Cubs for you MLB fans out there with Ryan Davis and Sean Sears. Plenty of ways to get your Chicago sports talk here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And there's actually a way you can meet a Chicago Bulls player with Bowling with Bobby Portis. Check it out, Locked On Bulls on Twitter, on Facebook, or search Bowling with Bobby Portis on eventbrite.com. We're talking Mitchell Trubisky and quarterback development here with Mark Schofield from Locked On Patriots, and more specifically Pro Football Weekly, because he wrote a phenomenal piece on there. I highly recommend everybody check out ProFootballWeekly.com, find Mark Schofield's quarterback breakdown, because he really, you know, play examples and going in depth on all of this stuff in the written form. Glad we have him on the podcast today helping talk us through it. And Mark, you know, I wanted to touch on the Jared Goff thing real quick before we get to Nagy's scheme, because I wanted to get your perspective on, you know, is there precedent for Jared Goff's ascension? Because, you know, I think the Rams last year in general, you know, they give Bears fans and really a lot of teams around the league a lot of hope that you can make that quick year two jump. And I know as a team, what the Rams did was probably more exceptional, but from a quarterback standpoint, is there much precedent to, you know, a rookie quarterback struggling in year one and really taking that big of a step in year two? Or is Goff a lot more of an outlier than we might think?
You know, it's interesting, Lauren. I remember back, you know, it's a summer ago when we had, you know, a sampling of Jared Goff. You know, we had seven starts from him, and they go 0-7, and he throws five touchdowns and seven picks with, you know, adjusted net yards per attempt of 2.82, and these are bad numbers. I mean, no doubt about it. And, you know, people are looking at him as being perhaps a bust. And I, you know, kind of looked around the quarterback landscape, and I came across a quarterback who, in seven starts his rookie year, his team finished 1-6. He threw 6 touchdowns and 9 interceptions with an adjusted net yards per attempt of 3.21.
May I guess?
Go ahead.
Peyton Manning?
Eli Manning.
Oh,
close. Everybody goes to Peyton with the whole like rookie getting, you know, struggling and then getting better. But Eli's numbers were like eerily similar to me. When you look at Goff, you know, again, 7 starts, you have the bad adjusted net yards per attempt. You've got, you know, 6 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. That next year they go 11-5. You know, he throws 24 touchdowns. He does throw 17 interceptions, so you're still seeing that. But, you know, the numbers do take a jump. And so there is some, you know, precedent for guys making that jump in the second year. And, I mean, you could even look last year at, you know, Carson Wentz from year one to year two. Now, Wentz was in a much better situation than Goff. I mean, even though looking at that draft class, Goff was 1, Wentz was 2 for me coming out. If you were to ask me that Friday morning after they were both drafted in the first round, I would have told you flat out, look, Wentz is going to have the better transition because he's going to Doug Peterson. He's going to Frank Reich. He's going to these guys, John DeFilippo, that are better suited to develop a young quarterback. And so while Wentz did struggle too, you know, he had a better landing spot and coaching staff fit. And then he took a similar leap, you know, into his second year. And so there is sort of precedent for quarterbacks making a leap. And let's not forget, we always gloss over the real world stuff that these guys are dealing with. We get so focused on the between the line stuff. You're talking about a guy moving to Chicago, a guy, you know, doesn't really get into the playbook and things like that. You know, he might get it during pre-draft visits and stuff, but doesn't really, really sit down and absorb it because he's going to be running this stuff until after the draft. And it all happens on such a compressed time format that they don't get the full benefit of a year in a system. Now Trubisky has that. And so even though Nagy's coming in with his new system and stuff, he's had an entire offseason program, an entire, you know, winter and spring, not worried about the draft and taking meetings and things like that, just focused on this playbook. And so I think that's also something we don't talk about a lot, but it plays a huge role in getting that sort of developmental leap from year one to year two for rookie quarterbacks.
Let's talk about that playbook in particular. You know, Matt Nagy, known for putting his quarterback in position to be successful. We're seeing a lot of the, you know, the spread concepts, the RPOs, the different things this preseason, but it's still preseason, it's still vanilla, still a lot of your more, I think, base type plays, not putting too much sauce on it or anything. What did you see from what the Bears ran this preseason? And I guess how much more is there? You know, how much more is there? How much more exotic do you think it will and can get?
I mean, there could be a ton more. I mean, you know, this isn't Bears specific, but Patrick Mahomes was asked about, you know, what have you guys done in preseason? Where are you? And, you know, the install of the playbook. And he basically said, look, we used 2 of our 13 packages in our preseason games. And so we're not seeing a ton of what these teams are doing. We're seeing real base stuff. That being said, though, we're seeing a couple of things that I really like, you know, for a young quarterback. We're seeing the use of package plays. And people talk about RPOs, run pass options a ton. It's the new sort of en vogue term. But there's an offshoot of that, sort of the distant cousin of the RPO, which is the package play, where you've got a potential run built in, whether it's an inside run, zone stretch, or whatever. But you've also got, whether it's a bubble screen or some other pass built in, that simplifies the decision-making process for a quarterback. And it might just boil it down to, can he count to 6? You know, you hear, for example, defensive coaches, like I forget who it was, might have been, you know, Greg Williams, or no, it was who used to coach the Spagnuolo. He did a thing for NFL Game Pass where he said, look, if you can count to 3, you can play defense because you have 3 receivers potentially to one side of the field or the other. So 1, 2, 3, which guy is yours? That's a way to simplify it. It's the same thing for making box count reads as a quarterback. Can you count to 6? If you've got 6 guys in the box, you could run the ball. If there are 7, then you might want to throw it to the outside. It's so simplified. It's like a high school level thing, but it can work in the NFL. And we're seeing those sort of package plays. I broke down, you know, at least one of those in that Pro Football Weekly piece. The other thing we're seeing, which I like, and this is in addition to seeing some of the air raid stuff work in from his UNC days that Trubisky was running, was the use of motion. And I might get sort of spoiled and I might have sort of this, you know, aggrandized vision of how important motion can be to an offense. But let's not forget, as a host of Locked On Patriots, I see every single offensive play that the Patriots run every single year now. And since I've been a fan, you know, dating back to the start of the Brady era, And I see how often this team uses motion, how often this team uses pre-snap movement. And it does a couple of things. One, it sort of dictates matchups. You know, you can move guys around and then you might be able to get Rob Gronkowski matched up against the linebacker. And that's something you're going to want to exploit. So there's that. And anytime you can get an advantageous matchup for your quarterback, you're helping him. But the other thing is it helps you uncover the coverage scheme. You know, and there's a play that I broke down. It's just a simple little play where they put the fullback out wide. The Pats do this a ton where they put James Devlin out to the boundary and they see who goes over there. And if they see a cornerback go outside, well, they're going to know, look, they're in zone coverage or some kind of zone coverage, because unless you're really crazy and really trying to have fun with us, you're not going to put a Richard Sherman, you know, or a Prince Amukamara out there on our fullback. And so if you see that, you know it's zone. Or if you see a linebacker go out there with him, now you got a pretty good idea it's man coverage. And then they motion him back into the formation. The linebacker trails him. And he knows at the snap of the ball, I know at least whether it's man versus zone. So he doesn't have to make that one decision. And anytime you can get more information before the play begins, it's going to speed up that decision-making process that we started this podcast talking about. And so I loved seeing stuff like that. Anytime you can move offensive players around pre-snap, you're helping your quarterback. And look, as an offensive-minded guy, anytime you're making the guys on the defensive ball have to think a little bit, you're helping yourself out too.
So as we move into looking forward in this 2018 season, what are your expectations for Trubisky? I know there's kind of a lot of unknowns and some question marks on exactly where his development is, and the preseason didn't necessarily answer that. But you know what? I don't need like a stat line or anything. But what are you expecting from Trubisky? What is a fair bar to set? Because I think you know the Jared Goff might be a little bit high and, you know, not necessarily something every quarterback can do. So where are you expecting Trubisky to be this year?
I mean, I think, first of all, it's important to remember that, you know, when everybody, you know, sort of takes a global look at where Trubisky is right now, obviously there are some question marks because the stat line, the numbers and things like that, obviously it wasn't fantastic for him last year. I mean, you look at, you know, where he finished, you know, as a passer in this league last year, you look at the adjusted net yards per attempt and it's, you know, 5.05. It's not great. You know, it's sort of near the bottom of starting quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, he finished 26th just behind Eli Manning. You know, you see 7 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. And so, you know, it was okay. You know, and I think whatever you look at people that do sort of like preseason rankings and tiers and things like that, you know, I'm working on some right now for Big Blue View, and, you know, I don't want to get people too mad at me, but look, Trubisky's going to be near the bottom because that's sort of his starting point. That being said, look, I'm cautiously optimistic about Mitchell Trubisky here in year two, and I was cautiously optimistic about both Goff and Wentz last year, you know, going into their second years. And the reason for that is, again, for a lot of the things we've talked about, you know, full sort of off-season program, you know, in this Matt Nagy system, the influence of the new coaching staff and the scheme stuff. And so I think when you sort of take a step back and try to project where he might end up, where he might finish it then, yeah, the Jared Goff numbers, that's probably going to be a big ask. And I don't think the Bears need that. I don't think the Bears need that to be successful, to be a potential playoff team. I think what the Bears fans should hope for is that Eli Manning year two type of stat line, where you're seeing a guy that comes out and completes, you know, 53% of his passes, maybe hopefully a little bit more, because there should be an offense that's probably going to be operated more in the short area of the field where Manning was more downfield that season. You know, so you might hope to see him completing like, you know, 60, 62% of his passes probably. You know, he completed 59 last year, so that would be an improvement. You hope to see, you know, 20, 25 touchdowns, maybe 10 to 12 interceptions. I mean, I think that's somewhat reasonable. I don't need the guy to go out there and sling it and put up huge numbers to win games. This is an offense that's going to win games with their defense. I mean, this is a team that's going to win games with their defense. This is a team that's going to win games with the ground game and getting better consistent production with Trubisky. And I think a Manning year two type stat line, Eli Manning year two type stat line, would be a good goal.
He is Mark Schofield. You can read his full breakdown of Mitchell Trubisky on ProFootballWeekly.com. If you go there right now, it's on the homepage. You cannot miss it. It's a nice little picture of Trubisky throwing against the Broncos. It is as in-depth of a quarterback breakdown on the Bears franchise quarterback as you'll find on the internet. He also writes for Inside the Pylon, The Score and Big Blue View, and he is the host of Locked On Patriots here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Mark, we got to do these Mitchell Trubisky quarterback podcasts a couple times a year, and I'm glad we got one in already.
Dude, Lord, you know where to find me, buddy. Love coming on talking QBs. Really excited to see Trubisky this year. I do think that, yeah, you know, the national stage might be a little bit undervalued in where he is right now, or at least waiting to see where he could be right now, you know, with rankings and things like that. But I think it's going to be a different picture once we get into week four and week eight. And it wouldn't surprise me at all. Like I said, I'm cautiously optimistic about where he's going to go.
Well, Mark, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you sharing your analysis with us here, and looking forward to more great things from Locked On Patriots and maybe Locked On Quarterbacks someday.
There we go, man. Would love it.
Thanks again to Mark Schofield from Locked On Patriots and Inside the Pylon and Pro Football Weekly for joining us on the podcast today. Hope you check out his great work over there, and I hope you'll subscribe to the Locked On Bears podcast. We'll keep bringing you more in-depth Chicago Bears news and analysis just like this. I also encourage you to continue to reach out to our fan voicemail and text line. We've already been getting some questions in, and going to save those for our next episode here as we really prepare you for Green Bay with our last podcast of the week. Got a question about how their defense is going to stack up and how this Bears team is going to stack up. Lots coming in so far. If you want to get involved with the show, give us a call, give us a text. Phone number is 312-620-8590. You can always find it in our Twitter bio for the Locked On Bears podcast at Locked On Bears. You can follow me personally on Twitter at Cox Sports One. It's COX Sports and the number one. So many great ways to keep up with more Chicago Bears talk. And I hope you'll keep it locked here on Locked On Bears all throughout this season. We'll be bringing you more podcast goodness, more great guests like Mark Schofield, and more opportunities to bear down.